No class.
Sit up for you. I'm stuck here.
Yes. Okay, we are on page Nun Vav.
You can go to my car again.
Nun Vav. Middle of the page, the bold line. The bold line. Last week we had a very lengthy discussion regarding the Zohar's concept of the Jewish people, the Torah, and God are one. Hopefully it was meaningful. We got into a discussion of the aspect of the hidden aspect of God and the revealed aspect of God. This is all following up on the concepts of how the third level of soul, the neshama, surrounds and hovers around the person in a close proximity, and that being considered the sod, the secret of the verse in Song of Songs, which says the crown that his mother crowned him with. Okay, and again, the third level of soul, that neshama, is reflective of the partsuf of ima, of mother, right? And that is like the crown. That concept, if you have the neshama, if you're connected to your neshama, that is like the crown. That is the crown. And those sparks that come off from the neshama and resurface on the highest levels of ruach, we talked about that. We talked about how this happens in the higher worlds as well. We talked about how that midrash, when the child comes from the school and he wants to receive from his father's mouth the food, the whole idea of the mouth, we're saying, is since the neshama is like the mouth of the air, of the glass blower, right? Remember the glass blower analogy, where that is the level of neshama, the neshima, the breath of the glass blower. So that, whenever we have the words P, the mouth, we can understand that a lot of wisdom is connected with that. And that's what you're getting from the neshama, from the third level of soul. Okay, and that was generally what we're talking about. So now we're going to have a very interesting verse here, and I knew I had some good notes on this from a while back, and I finally dug them up an hour before class, so hopefully you'll enjoy it. We're in the bold print. V'zeo sha'am rusham. Now we can understand that which it says in Song of Songs. It's really, it's the Gemara, but it's the Gemara's interpretation of what it means of Song of Songs. It says, "B'shah sha'am the Yisrael al Har Sinai," when the Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai lekabel haTorah, to receive the Torah, "Hayu mevakshim lishmoa hadibros mipi haKodesh Baruch Hu." Really, that's in the Chumash. Matter of fact, they wanted to hear the commandments from God. Right? That's what it said. Ritzoneinu, we want to see our God. We want to hear our God, not just to come from any intermediaries. That's what they wanted. Ukemo shekasev, as the verse says in Song of Songs, Yishakeni mineshikas piv. King Solomon says, this Song of Songs is the love song between the Jewish people and the Almighty. And in this verse, King Solomon says that his greatest request is that, God, you should kiss me from the kisses of his mouth. That's what he says. And this kissing, the commentaries refers to, is the giving of the Torah at Sinai. That's the original kiss. Okay? Kiss me. So now, what does that mean? Why? Now, obviously, based on what Reb Chaim said, it's kind of clear. Because again, the kiss is coming from the lips. And that's where the neshima is coming. That's where the breath is coming. But I want to expand on this, and it's an interesting topic, and I think there's a lot of spiritual concepts that people fail to realize in this aspect. So we're going to explain on many levels. It's not going to be in contradiction to what we're saying. I think it'll just amplify to what we're saying. What's the concept of kissing having to do with the giving of the Torah? So the Baal HaTanya explains. He says, our concept of what Torah is, and it's following up on what we talked about last week as well, is that what did really God do? God poured part of himself, or not himself, but from him comes out every part of his being which is accessible to man. And that is, he poured it into the Torah. The Torah is that expression. And Reb Chaim is going to bring a Zohar, or the Talmud, that says the very first words of the Ten Commandments, the first word is Anochi. Aleph, Nun, Chaf, Yud. It's an acronym. It stands for, the Aleph stands for Ana, which means I. The Nun stands Nafshi, my nefesh, my soul. Ksavis, Kisavis, I wrote. Ve-Yehavis, and I gave over. Yehavis, I gave it over. Meaning to say that I've given myself over in this book. Whatever you're going to understand, that's what Anochi. Ano, I, Nafshi, my soul. Of course, I've got a soul. Kaf is Kisavis, Kisavis, I wrote. Ve, and Yehavis, I gave over. Well, it's Aramaic. It's Aramaic. Kisavis. Kisavis. Let me write on the board. The Aleph stands for Ana. This is Aramaic word. Ana. I. Nafshi. So. Kisavis. I wrote. The ve is add, but yud. Yehavis. That's anochi. Okay? That's the idea. The Almighty is, so to speak, saying, I've poured everything I've got in there. Now, nefesh has another meaning, by the way. Nefesh also means desire. Okay? It means desire, which fits in as well. Okay? So that's what it means. The Almighty says, you know, I am in, the Almighty wrote and he tried to imbue the book with the energy of God that's an example of his essence. That's what we talked about last week. Torah is the closest thing to God being there. Okay? So what really happens with this, if you think about it in its deepest sense, the giving of the Torah then becomes an intimate act. That's what it really was. And all these, you know, notions of Sinai being a marriage, there's a lot of the symbolism is very, very true. And the giving of the Torah was, in effect, an intimate act. Because when we talk about intimacy, we don't only necessarily confine that to physicality. But intimacy really means opening up of oneself, sharing of oneself on the deepest level with someone else. That's what being intimate is all about. You can do it physically, and you can do it mentally. You can do it many ways. So too, God is, by writing the Torah, he makes himself available to be penetrated by man through the book that he wrote. That's what it is. God is opening him up himself to become intimate, for the Jewish people to become intimate with him. Okay? So he invites us with the Torah to go ahead, penetrate my being to the extent that it's possible for a human being to do that. Okay? And therefore, what really the giving of the Torah is an intimate overture by God to his people. That's what it really is. Okay? So therefore, what word will we do to reflect on this? What saying will reflect this? So that's what King Solomon says, kiss me. We refer to a kiss. The idea is the love that was intimated in that giving of the Torah. Okay, in memory of that love, King Solomon is saying, I'd like to have that again. It's that nostalgia, so to speak, of that relationship that we had, that special moment of intimacy that was there at Sinai, I'd like to have it again. And as we'll read on Reb Chaim a little later, we'll see that it can still happen. You can still accomplish that. Okay? Now let's go a little bit further. Okay? Let's go a little further then. The Alshich, Moshe Alshich, he says, this is the way he explains. He says there's two basic forms of expressing love. One way is called chibuk, hugging, and the other one is nishuk, kissing. What is the philosophical difference between the two of them? So he says, by and large, a hug, okay, it's a physical embrace, And very often it can be an expression of experiencing love on a physical level. Right? Touching someone, embracing someone, holding them tight. It could also be reflecting a deeper level of love, right? But the physical chemistry of love can be felt by hugging and can be nurtured by hugging. It's more expressed, the more physical element of love. The Al-Sheikh says kissing, the nishuk, in its highest form, is really a spiritual connection between two individuals. And in this case, where King Solomon uses the word a kiss, referring to Sinai, it's between the Jewish people and Hashem. Why? Because if a mouth is used for what it is created for, if it is used for what it's created for, where you're only uttering words of Torah, songs of praise to God, prayer, making people feel good by speaking nicely about them, then it would be the most significant active organ of the human body in terms of spiritual expression. There's no other part of your body that can express itself so spiritually as the mouth. And that's what we've already brought already, the idea when it says in the verse that God blew into his nostrils a living soul, and man became a living soul. So we already saw a couple weeks ago that the Targum explained it means l'ruach m'malava, a speaking being. So what does that mean? It means the outward manifestation of the infusion of the soul, right, was in what? In the capacity for the mouth to communicate in a way that no animal could. That's the physical manifestation of the spirituality. So the Al-Sheikh says, when the mouth is used properly, it has a tremendous power to generate spiritual energy, and you're able to bring up very deep spiritual energies that reside within the person. That's what your mouth is really for. Such a mouth, okay, when that mouth would be engaged in kissing, okay, what is it really doing? You're actually at that point, and if you have two people engaged in that process, it's actually transferring back and forth the spiritual energies that are between the two people. If your mouth is being used properly, that mouth is bringing up the most spirituality that you have. It's the greatest expression of your spirituality. When two people are engaged in that, so they're bringing out the back and forth of the spirituality that's between the two of them. Okay, with this in mind, then certain stories in the Torah become a little bit clearer. I'm sure when you were in school, you always were wondering, well, what's going on over there when we are told that Jacob meets Rachel for the first time and he gives her a kiss, right? And, you know, when we were in school and wanted to make our teachers crazy, so you see, so what's wrong with kissing a girl on a date, Rebbe? I mean, what's wrong with it? The Torah says that Yaakov did it, right? And he always would say, well, his kiss isn't the same as your kiss, you know, and that's the way it was. But now you understand on a much deeper level, okay? This form of kissing is really a spiritual bonding, a giving back and forth spiritual energy between the people. And what was Yaakov doing for 14 years before he met Rachel? He was learning Torah nonstop. His mouth was one spiritual motor. That's all it was, and that's all he related to, right? When he saw Rachel, he didn't just see a pretty face, okay? He saw that this is my spiritual mate. And now the highest form of being able to show that expression of that spiritual connection was bringing out that which is inside of his soul and to connect that with her, okay? That's the concept over here. And therefore, when we say to God, when King Solomon says, you should kiss me from the kisses of his mouth, okay, what he's really saying is, oh, how I would like a kiss like I once got a kiss from God. We once got that kiss from God at Sinai. We once got that kiss. But notice what's interesting, the grammar. Yishakeni means what? He should kiss me. Minashikos, from the kisses of Pihu. His kiss. It's third person. Right? Right? He should kiss. Why third person? It's not directly, because we're a little bit embarrassed. Because perhaps we don't deserve it. Perhaps we don't deserve it, but we say it loud enough for God to hear it. He should kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Right? Okay, I'll trust you. I'm not a big grammarian, so if you tell me it's subjunctive, I'll agree with you. Okay, but that's what he wants. So he realizes we all got that kiss from God at Sinai, and King Solomon's saying, I'd like to get that kiss again. So in Reb Chaim's words, it's clear. You want to be able to get in contact with your neshama. You get in contact with your third level of soul, that's the kiss. And again, that fits in because the glass blower, that's where the lips are, that's where the air is. Right? It all fits into this idea. Now, the Vilna Gaon asks an interesting question. Now, let's be very precise. Yisha Keini means what? He shall kiss me. How many kisses?
One.
Kiss me. When you ask somebody to kiss you, you know, like when they go to the kissing booths, how many kisses do you get for a dollar? I think just one, right? Right? So one kiss. How does he know? So anyway, but then the next word says, Mineshikos. From the kisses. What should be the proper Hebrew word to keep it? Mineshikat. From the kiss of. Not the kisses. Kisses of. You see the problem in the text? Right? No, but...
No, maybe for all the world.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
there are more than one kiss.
Oh, but kiss me from... You don't have to talk about everybody else. Just give me one kiss. Right? Give me a kiss from the kiss, right? So, his answer lends us a great spiritual insight to what a spiritual kiss is all about. The Talmud says like this, regarding the commandments that God gave. It says, Achas diber Elokim, God spoke one, Ushnayim zu shamanu, and two we heard. In other words, God said one thing, but we heard two things at Sinai. So what does Gemara mean? There's a lot of different chazal, but this one means that God, the first two commandments, God said simultaneously. It left his mouth as one utterance, but what did we hear? We heard two things. We heard two things. We heard the two commandments simultaneously, and they were heard directly from God. So that's what it means. Yishakeni, give me one kiss. It's one utterance, but it's from the nishikos, from the kisses, because we felt too. It was like one statement, but from only God can do this. One statement, but two sentences came out. So it's one kiss, but two kisses came out of the one kiss over there. Now, that's very cute, but what's conceptually meant over here? So the Gemara is saying like this. Gemara tells, when we heard the commandment of Anochi, I am your God, what did we get out of that? Was it merely just a statement? So the Gemara says we got a lot more than that. It says that the inspiration and the motivation and the spiritual ability to perform positive mitzvos was then instilled in our beings from that. That's what we got. It wasn't just the fact of information that I am one God, but the actual growth process of soul happens after they heard the word of God. And when they heard, I am your God, they were excited to do mitzvahs, positives. When they heard the second commandment, you shouldn't have any false gods, so it means that the Yetzer Hara, to have people to do negative things, was taken out of our hearts. In other words, negative things are things that would be a contradiction to a relationship with God. So the desire to do negative things went out of our hearts. So at that first kiss, so to speak, what happens? The relationship is built on the fact that, number one, that we have the ability to cultivate what is before us, do all the positive things, and exclude other things that could hurt the relationship. I mean, that's how you have to really view you're doing mitzvahs or you're not doing averos. You're doing mitzvahs because you want to cultivate the relationship with God. That's what you should think when you're doing mitzvahs. I stay away from averos because I don't want to bring anything that's going to hurt the relationship. Okay? So therefore, the positive mitzvahs, they cultivate the positive aspects of commonality between man and God. And the negative aspects, they keep the garbage out of the relationship that would tear away the heart and energy that's necessary to have a full relationship with God. Okay? So with the first commandment of Anochi, we have the ability to serve. And with the second ability, we have the ability to overcome the Yetzer Hara that was previously infused in us. Now, the Vilna Gaon says something fantastic over here. He says that's exactly what happens when a kiss happens. When you kiss someone, and preferably, you know, your spouse or somebody that, you know, you're very close with, and the idea of a kiss is, number one, is a celebration of the fact that you have each other, but it also does something one, also something else. It's also, it's a private, it's as private as an act to the person to show that there's nobody else involved in this. It's exclusionary. Okay, let's say, we'll just pick the most common example. When a husband and wife kiss, or even when lovers are kissing, what's on their mind? Meaning, A, we're happy together. That's an inclusionary factor. And number two, we're excluding everybody else. No one else will be as intimate to us. We're blocking out the negatives, any other garbage over there. So therefore, when we say that God kissed us at Sinai, so how did he kiss us? A, by infusing us with the strength to serve God, to bond with him, the positives, and also by infusing within us the strength to keep the garbage out of the system. And that's another meaning of the two kisses that come out of one, right? The strength to serve, and also not to do anything to spoil the relationship. Okay, that's all inherent in the kiss over here, that closeness you feel. Okay? Now, the Gra then, the Vilna Gaon now takes the Kabbalistic route, which is very cute, and has a nice insight over here as well. He says like this. He says, all positive commandments in the Torah, he says Kabbalistically, emanate from one particular letter. Okay, the one particular letter is the letter Vav. Okay? All negative commands emanate from the letter He. That's what he says. There's all kinds of hints to that idea. But with this, we understand that we can make general categories of mitzvahs. And for example, if you take the Vav and the Hay, numerically, a Vav is a 6 and a Hay is a 5. Okay? So the Talmud says that there were 613 mitzvahs, and various prophets like stood them on general principles that were less reductionist. It says King David stood them on 11 principles. And then the Talmud goes on to list 6 positive commandments and 5 negative commandments. In other words, you can almost encapsulate the entire Torah with this concept. And then the Talmud, then the Gra goes on a little further, and he says, which letter is more appropriate for men and which letter is more appropriate for women? So he says, you know, based on this, it would appear men and women, we know, are equal in their necessity to keep negative commandments. The negatives, a man and woman are exactly the same. Okay? In other words, what has to stay out of a Jewish person's life that can disturb the relationship with God? Both man and woman have to not let that get involved. They all have that, right? In terms of the positive ones, they're not the same. Women are not as obligated as men. There's a few exceptions. Men have more obligations. So therefore, if we describe woman's most direct obligation of Torah, it would be the letter He, because the letter He is referring to the negative commandments to stay away from, the negative ones. While for the man, he's more connection. In the positive way, it would be the letter Vav. You see the connection there? There's also other interesting ideas that come out of that as well. We know there is 6 from the Echad Miadei of the Haggadah. What are the 6 and the 5s? 6 orders to the Talmud and 5 books of the Torah. Which area are women more supposed to be involved with? In the Torah, the 5 books. That's the Hay, that's the 5. Men are supposed to be more involved in the oral law, in the Talmud. That's the 6. So it all fits in. If you keep this idea, men is 6 and women is 5. It fits in real nicely. Now, we even can extend this grammatically. Whenever you want to have a word with a possessive afterwards, which letter is the possessive for man and which is the possessive for woman? Let's say just a simple one, the word im, with. Right? Im. With. So for a man, it's imo, above at the end.
presence with him. For a woman, it's imam with her.
Right? So it's a good way to remember all that, right?
But so, you know, the amazing thing that usually we associate pay and receipt written for the name of God.
Well, obviously, what do you see over here? You've got a hay and a vav. Let's go further. Let's go further. What do we know? Well, the famous one we say is a man is spelled ish. Mm-hmm. She says, right? And a woman is spelled isha. Right? So there's two common letters to both of them. Aleph and Shin, which stands for fire.
Right.
All right? So the man's got a yud, the woman's got a hey, and that's God's name. Yud hey is God's name. Meaning to say, if there's God in the marriage, everything is good and well. You take God out of the marriage, all you have is ash, fire. That's all your marriage is going to be meant to be. Right? In other words, a man and a woman basically are fires. You know, you put two people, you know, did you read in the, which thing was it in? I forgot where I read it. Last week, they found a man in Israel, a 91-year-old Holocaust survivor. He stabbed his wife of 47 years, or 57 years, I don't remember. He stabbed her 61 times and murdered her. And the police said that many of the stabs were after she was long dead. And the guy was quoted, he says, the day I married, I didn't have one day of peace with her. All right, so what do you see? You see the fire that can come ping 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 ping. Can't get along. It's momish fire. Now, obviously, if you put God into the relationship, that can focus, and you can have two people that are dynamos. Can create fire, can do a lot. You can warm yourself by fire, or you could burn with fire, right? So now it even fits in a little bit better when we're looking at the Almighty's name of Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey. So now it's very good. We've got God over here, and the female here, and the male here. It all fits into, it's all one thing. It's all one thing. We get from God the female characteristics, the male characteristics, and by being together, this is the greatest reflection of God. That is the Tzelem Elohim, the real image of God, the Talmud says, is only the man and woman together. That's the ultimate, because they each have different strengths in different areas. Okay, so let's get it back to this verse. So now look what it says. He should kiss me from Nishikas, from the kiss of, now grammatically the last word, P, who, is what? It's from the root word peh, mouth. Now, you could say his mouth in two ways. You could say piv, pei yud vav, but it says instead, pihu. Why pihu? Because what are the last two letters? Hey and vav. Could have said minashikas picha, from your mouth. Piv is another way of saying his mouth. But in order to accentuate that the kiss that came from Sinai was a kiss of Torah both to men and to women. Okay, that's what the Vilna Gaon tells us over here. Okay, so it's much more than just a symbolism of love over here. The idea of the kiss, okay, is the capacity that was imparted to the Jew at Sinai, the capacity, number one, to do the things that make the relationship go, and the capacity to keep the things that don't belong in the relationship, to keep them out. Okay, that's the, I mean, there's a little more to talk about, but we got to learn this book a little bit more, but I just found that extremely fascinating. I wanted to share with you, and therefore, but it all fits into what we've been saying, that when we want to get something really important from God, we always refer to the mouth of God, because that is the mouth that blows in the neshama, that blows in the soul. Okay, and therefore people can be capable of reflecting the spiritual connection in a relationship between the two of them by the act of a kiss, realizing that there is much more involved in a kiss. So when you kiss your spouse or lover, you can give them this whole class, and then you'll see if it makes a difference. I don't know. Anyway. Okay, but in other words, so when you see, you know, great people writing things and doing things, there's a lot more there than meets the eye. There's a lot more there, and you're trying to reflect a lot deeper concepts. Okay, so let's go ahead in the book now. Okay, that was my spiel for tonight. I'll try to cover some ground. Okay, so next paragraph. So what do we have? So what happened at Sinai then? Shabbat, but what do you see? The whole idea that this is what the intimacy is. Okay, sharing the greatest, everything that's in my spiritual vein to bring it out. And I want to merge that with somebody else. Right? That's what's happening here. And we want to merge that with God. Now, when will we ever be able to be intimate with God again? Hold on to your horses for a few minutes and we'll get to where that is. We had it once at Sinai. He's going to explain it. But when can we have it again? So let's see. Shabbat Hamamid Hamakudosh, at this very holy moment that we stood before God, Zohu Kulam, all Jews merited. Shayachofef Umeir Alehem Ziv Nitzotze Zohar Bechinas HaNeshama. They merit that the sparks of the radiant, illuminating levels of this Neshama, we merited that they surrounded and illuminated upon us. Right? Then, in other words, the Jews came in contact with the highest levels of their neshama, which is Minashimas Piv Yizbarach Kivyachol. As it were, they're coming in contact with the breath from the mouth of God. V'hu Sod Haksarim. And this now is the mystical secret of the crowns, Shezachu B'Sinai, that the Jewish people got. Now let's not mix up last night's Parsha class with crowns. Or maybe you want to make the connection. But in other words, the crowns were nothing more than the light of each person's neshama over them. In other words, those crowns were those sparks of the neshama that aren't in the head, right? But it's on the head. The neshama hovering, the neshama was like the crown. It was that close to them that it was mamish on top of their heads. That brought it. Remember we said it's outside, because it's how far away. That was the crown. That was, in other words, what was their crown? Talmud says they each got a crown. What's the crown? The crown is their neshama crowned them. And that's how close God was to them. That's how intimate they were with God. Now by Moses it says even more. Keser Berosho. Keser, it's in the Shachris for Shabbos. When you go over the Chazaras, you know the Shmon Esrei there? The Keser Berosho. A crown birosho, not on his head, in his head. Because Moshe merited to have his neshama inside of him. All of us had a crown on our head, which was still pretty fantastic. But that's the idea of the crown. Okay. V'simchas, and Isaiah says, V'simchas olam al rosham, and an eternal happiness was on their heads. Meaning, happiness comes from that connection to the light of one's own soul. And now, what do they get from all this? Val yedei koch, and because of this close connection, zochu lahasik sisrei pinimios nishmas haTorah kedoisha. They were able to merit to understand and comprehend the internal secrets of the soul of the Holy Torah. What's the soul of the Holy Torah? K'mo shekasuv b'Zohar ba'aloschas, the Zohar says, skip three lines to the brackets. So it says like this, haTorah, Yesh Laguf, the Torah has a body and the Torah has a soul. What does that mean? Meaning to say that the body of the soul is the revealed understanding of the text. It's the meaning of the text. But the soul is the mystical secrets of the text. That's the soul. Right? And therefore when we have to come to Jewish halacha, we go with the simple meaning. For this world, we live with the simple meaning of the text. And what it means in the simplest form, which is true, and that's how we follow halacha and do our mitzvahs. The mystical analysis is understanding the will of God on a higher plane of existence, not on this plane of existence. Okay? But we have to keep the Torah as bodies, not as souls. Bodies have to keep the Torah. Anyway, so what do we know from this? Now you know what it means, that they were able to what? He says they were able to know the soul of the Torah. So Zohar goes on. Hachachamim avdei hamelach elyon, the wise people who serve God truly, Osam Shomdubar Sinai, those who were at Sinai, Einam Istakli, they saw how far? Ela Baneshama Shibatorah. They saw the soul of the Torah. Shu Ikr Kola Torah Mamash. It's the really, the primary, most important part. They were able to get to the soul of the Torah. And he explains in the third gate even more, they were able to understand reality in the greatest sense, beyond the physical realm. Right? He talks later on, what does it say, the rabbis say? They could see what you could hear, and they could hear what you could see. Meaning to say, they were able to see things beneath the surface of existence and to plumb it much deeper. Same thing in a relationship. You look at a person, you know, how they, those romantic ways. I saw her across the room. And what do they say? All physical descriptions. Right? That's one level of understanding somebody. But when you become intimate with somebody, what you see the secrets. You see that's way beneath the externals. Right? That's the idea. So the same idea of how we were intimate with the Almighty and we knew the depths of what Torah was trying to bring across to us.
But they had some trouble to really survive such a...
Yeah, they couldn't handle. They couldn't handle it for too long.
It's such a great thing.
Okay, there's a lot to talk about. That what scared them was the intensity of the relationship. You sometimes have people that have such a strong relationship and they back off because they can't bear the intensity of it. They're afraid to have that kind of commitment, and there were some problems there. But for that moment in time, that precious moment, that was exactly the highest level they could have reached. Ve'husha amru, and this is what it says. B'kama makomos b'medrash rabba, many places the medrash says, Zion hoyalem b'Sinai, they had a weapon at Sinai. V'shem ha'mefarsh chakuk olav, and the ineffable name was etched upon it. What does this mean? Shuha sogel yona b'nishmasa. This is the highest understandings of the soul, meaning that they possess the potential to be able to understand the will of God, and to be able to understand to the nth degree the will of God as it relates to me, that is referred to as the Shem HaMefarsh, the ineffable name. I don't know why, but that's what it means. And what else did they get? The Sistrin D'Oraisa and the secrets of the Torah, Shema HaMefarsh, of the ineffable name. And the truth is, what happened in the highest realms. In other words, remember, if it happens in our world, it's happening in the highest worlds. And therefore, the macro world was acting at the time of the giving of the Torah at Sinai. The macro world was acting as the macro neshama was pulsating through the highest spheres of the Adam HaElyon, the higher existing man of the sphere of the world there. And that meant to be, well, it means that the world was a much better place to be in at the time. And the truth is, this happens every year when we come to the holiday of Shavuos. That's the whole idea of Jewish holidays. Jewish holidays, it's not, we don't look at history as a straight line, but it's as a spiral. And whenever you pass by Shavuos, that's a time where the celestial spheres are lined up sitting pretty. And it's a very auspicious moment for one to make tremendous growth in Torah commitment. That's never lost in time. That moment in time is there forever.
That's why they study overnight.
That's why you study all night, various things like that. It should be a time where you really throw yourself into your studies for that day, for the holiday of Shavuos, because that's the most opportune time, because the way what we worked out physically 3,300 years ago, that forced the world, the spheres, to conduct themselves that way, and that never stops for on that particular day. Okay? Now, yeah, so they had a weapon, right? It was a weapon, this is an expression, a weapon with the ineffable name etched in it. And he's saying, what does that mean? It means they had an understanding of the neshama that was outside of them and the secrets of the Torah. That's all. I can't tell you why it's, you know, it is a weapon, right? And I mean, you could try to make some kind of connection to it. And, bottom line, and this is the sodas, the secret of Ba'atara Sheitra Lo Imo. This means the crown that his mother crowned him with. That's what the secret means. In other words, that crown, the mother the mother, the ima is the third partsuf, right? And that's the bina, right? The third level. We said there's three levels across every type of existence. Five, but on the third level, that fits to what our third level is, neshama. That's what it means. The mother, when the mother crowned, what does it mean? If the mother is the third level of existence, that's neshama. The neshama crowned the people. That's the idea. It crowned the people. Okay? And now, next page. V'dorshu al zeh b'chazis. The Medrash Chazis on this verse in Song of Songs tells us what it, now the end of the verse says, the crown that his mother gave it to him, b'yom chasunoso. That's the verse in Song of Songs. On the day of his marriage. So Rabbi said, what's the day of his marriage? That's Sinai. That was Sinai. In other words, the crown, he rejoiced in the crown that his mother gave him on the day of his marriage and the day of the rejoicing of his heart. So Rabbi said, well, what's going on? It's poetry. What's it mean? So the day of his marriage, meaning the day we were at Sinai. Day of Sinai, God crowned us. But he also crowned us on the day of Simchas Libo, of the rejoice of his heart. What's the rejoice of his heart? Says the Medrash, Elu Divrei Torah. These are the words of Torah. What's the Medrash saying? The Medrash is saying, anytime you sit and learn, the crowns are there. If you learn with purity of intent, which we'll talk about in the fourth gate, if you learn, you sit in front of a Talmud, you sit in front of a Chumash, and you are sitting there to learn the will of God with sincerity, you are crowned with those crowns. You come in contact with your neshama. That's what it is. Neshama is intellect. The sparks come closer. But a critical element, and in the fourth gate he talks a lot about it, it has to be lishma, it has to be purity of intent. Without purity of intent, you're not going to get any of this business. So this is the way you can become intimate with the Almighty on a constant basis. On a constant basis, when you study Torah to know the will of God, that means to say, I want to become intimate with God, that is, you will be crowned with that. The zeh, and that's what it means, ba'atar, the crown. Hey, Maksarma, now these are the crowns that we talked about before. Shehoyu b'sinai, that word at Sinai, Chai HaMelech. And look, in the Tzchaimah talks about this as well. Unbelievable. Unbelievable what a person can get. If you don't feel it, it's only because, as I said last night, the same reason. When you do mitzvahs, you don't feel good about it, it's lacking purity of intent. If you want to know about purity of intent, that was last night's Parsha class, you got to get the tape. Because that's a big step. It's easier said than done. It's not, don't try tomorrow. Okay, the rabbi said it. Okay, I'm opening up a chumash, and I'm learning chumash. I don't feel it. Takes a lot of work to develop purity of intent. But that tremendous joy, you know, of intimacy with God is available. Okay, when you're doing that. That's unbelievable. And it goes further than this. And like a lot of times women who may not be into Torah so much, I mean, listen, usually, traditionally, it's the guys who are into Torah, the women aren't. That's just the way it works out, especially in the more religious circles. But you see, it can't be that way. Because if the Vilna Gaon says he kisses with pihu, right, so there's a woman that has to be able to be intimate with God too.
But that other way.
Okay. So there's other ways, either in enabling the husbands to learn, or in terms of applying where they need bina. Bina is this understanding. We know that women have more bina than men. So when they apply that bina in situations such as raising their children properly and things like that, that's where they can connect as well. You know. So that's, but you gotta do it with purity of intent. That's always gotta be there. Either way, you've gotta have it. And if you don't have it, you're missing out a lot. Okay. Okay, that was just the warm up now. For chapter Yud Zayin, Perek Yud Zayin now. Now the fun begins.
Before you go on.
Okay.
Does the Jewish soul exist before the giving of the Torah?
Well, the way we've been learning so far, it appears that we had it from Avraham. The Jewish soul, the way it appears, the Jewish soul was not the Jewish soul. Backtrack, was the human soul. The human soul. And as we explained, during the Tower of Babel, most humanity lost that special type of soul and had a lower level soul. Only those who didn't lose it retained that initial soul the way it was, and that was Avraham. Now, Avraham kept our soul, so to speak, and from him developed others with that similar type of soul. And at Sinai, we confirmed it and locked it into place. That's the confirmation happened there. That's the simplest way to explain it. There's probably a lot more. I mean, we received connections, all of us, that we just weren't aware of until that time. Okay. There's probably more to that, but that's the simplest way of saying that. I mean, the truth is, they say that Sinai was like a conversion process. So, you know, there's a whole issue. What do you say about converts? What kind of soul did they have before? What do they have? There's all different opinions on that. But anyway, let's go on to chapter 17. Now, Unevoir. Now, so far we talked about three levels, but it goes much three levels of soul. But it goes much deeper than this. It's much more intricate, not hard, but just more intricate. Unevoir. Now, for us to explain Inyan Hiskashrus Hagimel Bechinas Nefesh Ruach Neshama Echad Becheruv Chaveiro. Now we're going to start to explain the concept of the area of connection between the three levels of soul, each one with the other. And the fact that they are interconnected, and he will explain how that happens, this becomes, v'hu yesod v'ikar inyan hatshuva. This becomes the fundamental point in the area of how tshuva comes to being. In other words, the most interesting area of this connection of the different levels of soul is that the fact that there is a connection enables a person to do tshuva. Okay, in other words, we will now start to work through, this week and next week, how the tshuva process works within the soul. The way the soul is formulated in man enables the tshuva process to happen. And that's how we're going to see it. Okay? V'zeh kol pri haser hachatos minefesh achoteis. And this is like the fruits. This is what we get out. The benefits are, number one, it affords the removal of sin from the soul that sins. And number two, ulatara mechelas tumaso, and to purify it from the sickness of its impurity. What does that mean? Meaning when you do tshuva, when you return to God, two things are happening. Number one, you get kapara. Kapara means removal of punishment. And number two, the person gains a purity that was lost. And Reb Chaim is saying that the connection of the three levels of soul enables those two things to happen. Now, when we talk about impurity, tuma, it's defined symptomatically, okay? It shows itself in a number of ways. Other than the fact that the neshama, the soul, receives a certain type of a blemish or a flaw by virtue of the sin that's done, but there's also an issue called timtum halev, which means insensitivity of the heart. When a person sins, the automatic response in the soul is that there are now the negative activities dull the spiritual sensitivities of the person. Okay? That's what we mean by tuma. Now that state of impurity is, when we talk about tuma, that's part and parcel of this spiritual insensitivity. Okay? In other words, not being able to sense the value of spirituality. The spirituality is something you just don't sense it. Right, and again, if you went to the Learnaplex, and we showed you Field of Dreams, right? If you've seen the movie Field of Dreams, where the guy has his in-laws over, and he's standing in front of the field, right? And he and his daughter see the people playing, but the other relatives don't. They think he's crazy.